I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carrie Adloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ads Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is High Fidelity by Nick Hornby.
What's it about? Well, it follows a story of hapless Rob, a 30-something record shop owner who's just been dumped and is trying to work out why women don't want to be with him and whose fault that is.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, everything from the 90s seems really weird looking back.
In this episode, we discuss
obsession,
music,
lads mags,
red flags,
author's intention,
and toxic masculinity.
And joining us this week is Nikesh Shukla. Nikesh is actually Dr. Nikesh Shukla, author and screenwriter and editor. His books include Coconut Unlimited, The One Who Wrote Destiny, Meat Space, The Boxer, Brown Baby, and he is the editor of The Good Immigrant, a collection of essays published in 2016.
You can find Nikesh on Instagram at Nikesh Shukla Writer, and his new kids book, The Council of Good Friends, is available right now.
Trigger warning, in this episode we discuss sexual assault and racism. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to you, Nikesh. Doctor?
Dr. Nikesh Shukla. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for addressing me correctly.
Yeah. Did you get your own doctorate or was it honorary?
It's made it sound like you bought it.
No, honorary.
Oh, I see.
I have two honorary doctorates, which yes. I feel like all the people who have PhDs who told me that an honorary doctorate isn't a real doctorate, I've got two.
Two honorary doctorates. They're definitely 0.5 of a doctorate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
two honorary ones.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. We're very excited.
Very excited.
This week we're talking about High Fidelity by Nick Hornby.
And I just want to jump in and interrupt you. As I
literally introduce the book.
This is the first time that the guest has chosen the book.
Normally we kind of give a list and we're like, what one would you like to
read? Or just tell them.
Yeah.
You have to read it.
Well, you know, it's because I'm a doctor.
Yes.
Authority.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, you said it. So, we want to know, why did you choose this book, Nikesh? Yeah.
Mostly because I reread it recently.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
But do you think it's relevant to sort of the weirdo ethos?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about this book. And I confess I misremembered this book.
That happens.
I think that's common.
We change, the world changes, and the book stays the same.
Every book we've done that we had read 10, 15 years ago.
Anything older than a month is out of date.
But we've come back to a book and gone, wow, that I don't remember those bits in the book being offensive. Oh, okay.
Well, there's some awful stuff in the book and there's some really questionable stuff in the book. But the thing that I think I'd misremembered about the book is I think there's a certain type of satire or comedy where the audience that it's satirizing doesn't get that they are the joke.
Yes.
And I feel like Al Murray's Pub Landlord suffered from this, or finance bros who watch The Wolf of Wall Street and they think it's like a lifestyle documentary. Yeah. And High Fidelity, I read it in my early 20s when record shops were not cool and records were affordable. And I really loved it when I read it. But then so much of what followed was loads of men not realizing how scathing it is about men.
It's
really scathing. And I think that's the bit that I'd misremembered, that he's not a hero. He's an awful, awful person.
He's a very unlikable character.
All the way throughout. And I think I think because, you know, John Cusack plays him in the film.
Well, this is it. I was going to say, I think the film came out, which I saw before I read the book. I remember going to see it. And he's played as a cool loser. I mean, that's John Cusack's career. And he's
cool loser.
And he's cool and he's funny and he's attractive and he's sort of a loser, but you sort of love him for it. But it's definitely of that Friends era where men were kind of shitty, but that's men, right? Men behaving badly, like happening in comedy in this country at that time. And I agree with you. It became that this book was definitely not a comment. It was like, hey, record guys are kind of funny, right? Yeah. Rather than...
And that's evolved so far that now that awful man, most recently, was played in a TV production by the most beautiful woman in the world, Zoe Kravitz.
Yes, they redid it as a television show and made it a woman.
Because that's how you would make him likable.
Yes.
You have to go all the way the other way to make an incredibly, exquisitely beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that, because this is why I decided to reread it. I was rewatching the TV show and I was talking to Nish Kumar about that show, and a thing that he said that I thought was really interesting was he said it's funny that the book and in the book and in the film the space of a record shop is like it's a space for outsiders and it's a space for weirdos, and now it's sort of it's come back around and it's seen as a very cool space. But I thought it was interesting that space that was for me like a difficult space where I was desperate to be liked and seen in those spaces, but it's full of men who know a lot about Prince and they take, you know, one of the world's sexiest, funkiest artists and they make him so fucking dull.
Well, also it's snobbery.
Yeah.
So I don't know about music.
As a conscious choice, as the daughter of a jazz musician, Sarah has rejected
because
music.
I don't like snobbery so much. Yeah. So one third of this book to me could be Greek. There are so many names of bands and names of singers. And the only time I'd ever heard of them was when he was listing people he didn't like. So I'd be like, okay, Tina Turner. Okay. He
doesn't like,
for some reason, he doesn't like Tina Turner or people who like Tina Turner. And I would like this man not to like me because I appreciate things that he doesn't. Yeah, so the music snobbery in general, that's like, and I know that, as you say, he's satirizing those people, not very generously, but you still have to spend a lot of time with one.
Mm. Yeah.
In his head, hearing his unrelenting point of view.
And I'm interested about the satire because I think as a woman reading this now, he's so unlikable.
Yes.
That any charm he had late 90s, early 2000s is gone. And he is at times sexually assaulting someone.
Yeah.
Mm. It's dealt with so flippantly in a way that's really shocking to read that back in that time, it was like, oh, well, that happened with that girl. I don't think Rob gets enough shit. I think Rob gives out a lot of shit. And I think you definitely get the sense of like, you know, this like, oh, he runs a record shop and he's a loser. But that the reason that an audience can go, yeah, that's me, because Rob doesn't get enough criticism sometimes for the things he's doing and saying.
I felt like I was reading Lads Mag after Lads Mag.
Yeah.
Like Nuts, Maxim, Nuts again, FHM, because of the tone of the comedy. He has this thing about women's pants.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I was reading it, like I would feel if I was watching a stand-up doing this routine, going, I know you're joking because you think this is funny. I also think he believes it.
Yeah, that's what I agree with you. That's what I mean about the satire. It's like he doesn't quite satire it so far that you think, oh, yes, the author is making a point.
He says he's complaining about how women's knickers aren't exciting enough. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard not to throw a book across a room when you're reading this. I have never really recovered from the shock of discovering that women do what we do, what be human beings. They save their best pairs for the nights when they know you are going to sleep with somebody. When you live with a woman, these faded, shrunken, tatty M&S scraps suddenly appear on radiators all over the house. What women are told growing up, I don't know if you remember this from women's magazines.
Yes.
We were told, don't worry about your pants. All men are interested in what's underneath.
Yeah, what's in your pants? They don't care what you're wearing.
Which is also really
also
bad.
Also awful. Also, thanks, Sugar, Ms. Moore, Justin Dean.
Yeah.
So I'm just drawn to, again, when he's talking about women, and this is, again, page 8, he says, he's talking about foreplay and how, again, it's such like 90s stand-up routines. He's like, oh, well, men are supposed to be bad at foreplay. That's because when we were teenagers, like, no woman let us do it. And now they all want foreplay. And yeah. he says, the perfect match, if you ask me, is between the Cosmo woman and the 14-year-old boy. And I read that and I was like, yeah. I was like, wow, like, how times have changed that he can casually write a 30-year-old woman should have sex with a 14-year-old boy. That's their match.
The bit that I really thought was fascinating about that in terms of a male author, he has this thing about foreplay. And I really wish he'd got proofread by a woman. Because
a sensitivity read.
Because he says that this thing about, you know, these girls pushing hands away, not wanting foreplay. Mm. Why don't they want to let themselves be aroused? Or you know, they don't want their erogenous zones touched. And it was such a male understanding of the female body.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to explain to him that you'd have to be aroused to want to have those places touched.
Yeah, like you're already in the wrong place.
Yeah. Them being touched when you're not aroused.
It'll be fine.
Yes. Why don't you want to enjoy this? those women aren't pushing his hand away because they don't want to allow themselves pleasure. It's because it won't be pleasurable to them.
I've never felt more like a grumpy feminist, as he describes
the people
in the book,
that he hates.
The paranoid feminist. Yeah, he goes through his exes at the beginning. The character Rob has been broken up with by a serious relationships. At the beginning of the book, he goes back through like every lost love. And the one that really got me was Penny, which is treated so flippantly that he was a teenage boy. He tried to force Penny to have sex and she got really upset. And then the next week, one of the boys at school was like, oh, I've nobbed her. And as a girl reading that, who's been a teenage girl, I was like, I know from page 10 why Penny did that, because you broke her heart and you made her feel frigid and you made her feel like disgusting. But reading Rob having no idea what he did at page 10 and then being expected to have any sympathy for him after that, I was like, I am still Penny's friend who had to deal with Penny writing poetry about you, self-harming, crying, like years of discussion about what you were doing, and then your life is sort of fine. And like I found that really, that's for me, that gulf between 1995 and now is that, like, that was funny then. It was a funny story that, like, oh, one of my exes, like, wouldn't sleep with me and then wouldn't sleep with someone else straight away.
And I should say, I mean, this is all just such downers, but then when Penny is brought back.
Oh, the way Penny is dealt with at the end, I found really difficult. Really, really difficult.
But then maybe this is the difficulty of comedy in general, because I should say the reason this is so hard for us is because Nick Hornby is really good at what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a brilliant writer. The book is
so
good.
So our criticisms are not criticisms of Nick Hornby.
No, and I have to say,
this book is really effective at what it's doing.
I enjoyed reading it.
In terms of rereading it, did you find these moments?
Well, you as triggered as we were.
Clearly were, yeah.
Well, I guess one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is this thing that's sort of happening in culture at the moment, where we're kind of, culture is reinterpreting the 90s.
Yeah.
Or things that, you know, watching the Beckham documentary understanding. Well, I don't remember the Too Posh to Push headline.
Yeah.
But,
oh, I do. Yeah.
But sort of seeing that recontextualized properly. And thinking about that and then thinking about, you know, people like Andrew Tate and how Andrew Tate has this very persuasive message in boys' schools. I do a lot of school events and I go and talk in boys' schools and his name comes up quite a lot. And so I've been thinking about how being a man was defined when I was growing up. And when I read it, I thought, well, this is fun. This is funny. And I think reading it in my early 40s, I spent the whole time just going, this is awful, but I feel like Nick Hornby knows this is awful. And I do agree that Rob does not get enough of a comeuppance. He doesn't get enough shit. And actually just rereading it was like, this is so much about the power of who gets to tell the story. Yeah. Because you tell the story of Penny from her perspective and it's a completely different story. Even, you know, the way he stalked Charlie.
That is dealt with. It's like sort of funny.
And then he lies to her later on when she's like, you're not having one of those like moments where you need all of the women in your life who are so important to you to make you feel better about yourself years later. And he goes, no, it's fine. And then that's exactly what he's doing. Mm. And so if it felt to me rereading it, like Hornby, I want to believe he knows this is an awful person. And I guess just part of me just wishes I'd sort of seen how toxic it was at the time.
I completely agree that I, you know, read it, watched the film, thought he was a charming, funny, great guy.
Also, not just who gets to tell the story, because actually you are allowed to be completely authored and completely immersed, and that person does think they're right, because we all do in our own heads and that's where we're spending our time. But actually the unhappiness of people, I guess we would now use the word like privileged.
He's so privileged, and he's so depressed.
Yeah, and their unhappiness has to make us forgive them. But I think that's also changed. Yes. Now we go, do you know what I wanted to do? This is my, go for a run. Get some endorphins, I kept thinking. He's never exercising. I wanted him to get out. I'll do a hot yoga class, man.
Men in literature who need therapy.
Yeah, there's no therapy.
Sort him right out.
I kept thinking, do the work. We don't allow people anymore.
Rob doesn't
just
do any work.
Just do a little bit of work, and then I'll be like, "Yes, you do deserve your girlfriend to come back."
There's a real lack of self-awareness, even when the girlfriend does come back. Because, and I don't think it's a spoiler because this book has been around so long, but like,
and her, I don't think we're encouraging anyone to read it.
No, I think it's rather when her dad dies. So she's gone off with someone else. She seems to be having a great time in his mind, and he's only obsessed with the sex she's having. He doesn't seem to miss. Yeah. Her, he only is upset that she might be having better sex.
But that
sex.
Is a satire on men. That the penis size thing, and that is him.
But it makes you hate Rob so much. Yeah. And then her dad dies and she kind of ends up realising maybe she does actually like Rob and she kind of would like to get back together with him. But even at the funeral, he's playing his
selfish...
But
she doesn't like him. She says she's too tired.
Yeah.
It's an act of defeat. Yeah. That is clearly there.
But it's so funny point. To me because it really reminded me of Men Behaving Badly.
Yeah.
When you think back to that show, it's two men who are dating two women who essentially are their mums. Like, that is the job of the female characters. They come in, they tell them off, they tidy up. They are mums that they're sleeping with. It's so weird that that was so successful. And again, with this book, like, Rob's behaviour in 1995 was normal. It was normal. Well,
but I think this is part of the reason I found it so interesting reading it.
Yes,
now.
Yeah.
Because it is so normal and that awful behavior is probably so recognizable for a lot of people. But what I think is interesting is a lot of people would have read it and gone, just like me.
Or, yes, that's true. As a woman, that's what men are like. Yeah. Whereas lots of men aren't. So probably some of my sexism is that's what all men are thinking about.
Yeah,
I projected a lot of negativity about men, assumptions, the things that were from a male perspective that I consumed were men behaving badly and high fidelity. So not that we talk a lot about the battle men are having, but when you talk about toxic masculinity, some of that is inherited and people are fighting to be individuals within it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because Rob is trying to differentiate himself from the bros at his school who just sleep around. But he differentiates himself by being like, yeah, but I like music. That's like it. Yeah, I'm still trying to have sex with every woman I know, but I like music. So
it's sort of like a timepiece about how the dominant male at the time was the jock.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you were a sort of air quotes sensitive guy who liked the arts, then you were just one of the nice guys. But, you know, the nice guys are just as fucking awful as the jocks were.
And that's it. He was seen as a better character than a jock character because he has a record store, guys. He's sensitive.
And it's a place where all the weirdos, the sort of the outsiders kind of congregate, who are all just as awful as him, if not in some cases worse.
The guy who works there, Dick, who gets that girlfriend, and they have that awful conversation where Dick literally tells her, no, one day you'll understand this is the music you have to like.
Yeah.
And that's left.
But there's an element that they all do that with female partners.
Yeah.
Is they're trying to instruct, like, you know, mixtapes.
Yeah. This is what you should like.
And the idea that you're supposed to be embarrassed about what you like. We read this book straight after Claire Dedera's Monsters, which ends really beautifully, which is about you can't help what you love. In terms of culture, certain things speak to you musically, cinematically, and especially books, and they're incredibly personal, just like loving people. That's it. You know, the creators are often flawed, but you love them. So to read that, which is like, you just like what you like, and then Nick called me and be like, you like this, you're a dick. What an idiot.
But there's a quote in it that it's not what you're like, it's what you like.
Yeah.
Is awful. Like.
Okay, but here's a question. Would you still look at someone's bookshelves if you went round their house?
The kids don't read, do they?
Because I'm looking for my book. Obviously.
Your first Dr. thing is to do have my book.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've been thinking a lot about how to write men
and
how to write a version of a man that feels like what I need to read and what the default of the of man is. And this type of male was so ubiquitous in the '90s. And I sort of read it now kind of feeling sad for my late teen self because I wanted to be that guy. And I would go into Mr. Bongo's on Saturday and like, with appreciation at the one record I was buying or whatever. And I'm rereading a lot of books at the moment or reading books that have passed me by. And so I went from reading High Fidelity to reading Love in the Time of Cholera, which I've never read before. And it's amazing. But also the men in that are fucking awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, the poor heroine of the novel, like she's just surrounded by men who dictate her life for her and wear her down. And it's all about attrition in a way that, when you were talking about how he wears Laura down.
Yeah.
The American singer who he...
Oh, that's Maria, hilarious. She sleeps with him and is totally fine with it.
Because he blanks her three times. Yeah. He kept walking away rudely.
Yeah.
And that was seduction.
Yeah. And then also he has a one-night stand with her and then she's cool with that. She doesn't need anything else. And she then meets his girlfriend and is like, don't worry, buddy, I got your back. I'm not going to say anything. I was like, that is a in terms woman that
of
doesn't
like,
exist.
In terms of like, exactly. In terms of like the ubiquitous, this is the default version of this. It feels very real, I think, but she is not a real character.
Yeah, she's not real. So that's the one where you're like, and she's friends with the guys from the record store, even though they are obviously losers.
But this also adds to people's I'm not gonna say depression, I'll say dissatisfaction with their life. So what you have is people having normal lives where people behave typically, and then you have works of fiction that tell them there will be other people that would behave a different way. So the problem with like the manic pixie dream girl that they would meet girls like that who would fancy them and they won't. And
they don't exist. They're not real. Yeah.
It's not real. Leads real people to go, oh, other people are having a better life than me.
Yes.
Rather than I need to put myself out there or behave slightly differently or be vulnerable.
Yeah. But he is a manic pixie dream boy. Like Rob is the equivalent of like, I'm just a guy that likes records, doesn't know what I'm doing in my life, just waiting for a girl to tidy me up and tell me what to do. Like it's the same genre. And it's quite, I guess it's quite fairy tale-ish, isn't it? It's like, but what's weird about it, I guess for our generation is you don't realise what's wrong with your generation until 20 years on.
Yeah.
So we could look at 1950s dad and be like, oh, look at him with his suit and tie and his not able to express any emotions. That's what's wrong. But the man we grew up with, we're like, no, that's normal. And now we're in 2023, we look back and go, what the fuck did we grow up in? That was awful. And you understand what your parents went through or your, you know, grandparents went through of like, yeah, no one knows what's wrong with their generation until you've walked past it and gone, sorry guys, sorry about that.
Kesh, I'm really interested in terms of the men that you're trying to write or should be writing.
Yeah.
So what are they like?
Yeah.
They're just nice guys. They're really into music. Well, so I think this sort of thinking about how men are written, just I've been thinking about, I guess, as a writer, how do I make a difference? You know, I started writing YA and I wrote a YA book called The Boxer, which is inspired by a thing that happened to me when I was touring The Good Immigrant. I was nearly attacked on a train and I was really scared. And so I took up boxing after it. And I wrote a book called The Boxer, which is sort of imagines what would have been like if I had been a teenager who'd been attacked in a racially aggravated assault and taken up boxing. And I did loads and loads of school events. And I would talk about the incident that happened to me.
I'm really sorry that happened.
Oh, Like, I was about to say thank you, but I don't
know why. No, like, I just didn't want to gloss over like that.
No,
that's
but also,
really
Sarah,
shit.
You shouldn't have done it.
No,
you shouldn't have done it.
I'm sorry.
But yeah. What I noticed when I was sort of doing this talk, because I purposely made it as vulnerable as possible, so I could, you know, being an Asian male talking like in schools where teenage boys are the first, you know, they stop reading for pleasure before girls
yeah.
do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how do you write fiction that resonates with boys? And how do you write fiction that is punchy, for want of a better word, but sort of says something? And I just noticed that the Boxer really resonated with reluctant boy readers. Teachers and librarians were always recommending it. Whenever I talked about it in schools and I did this talk about the vulnerability I felt, just the scaredness I felt like walking around my streets or in the train station that I go to most days, like the one that I came to today. And you just tell that like two or three boys in a room full of 180 students, it just moved the needle for them just by a millimetre. And so I've just been thinking, how do I continue to do that?
For the first time, they hear an adult talking about something that's their experience.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable. Is that what you mean as well? Yeah. Like allowed to be vulnerable.
And yeah. And then touring that book going into lockdown, over lockdown, I started like an informal movie club with Nish Kumar, Musa Okwanga, Inwa Elams and Vinay Patel. Lovely, lovely guys. And we'd watch a movie every Sunday. And then afterwards, we'd talk about the movie for 5 minutes. And then we'd just like talk about how sad and scared we were. And
oh, wow.
It was like a really nice, vulnerable space. And I thought, we all expressed this at some point or another. God, it would have been really nice to have friends like this when we were that age.
Yeah.
And I did have that friend. And I really remember like my best friend when I was at school, a kid called Anand. When I was 13, he moved to America and it just devastated me. I lost all of my confidence. Mm. He was just my confidence. Like when I was with him, I just felt unbeatable. Yeah. And, you know, we're still great friends thanks to the internet and I see him every couple of years now. But I just really remember that dip in confidence. So I did have that. And so I thought, well, how can I do something with all of this stuff? And so I created this kids book series called The Council of Good Friends, where I thought I'm going to honour Nish and Musa and Inwa and Vinay, because there aren't that many kids books that have kids called Nish or Musa or Vinay or Inwa. So I named characters after all of them and a character after me.
But also celebrating male friendship that's about intimacy.
Yeah, and so... and
it's so rare. Like I, as a... Sorry, I'm going to sound like a hashtag. As a mother of sons...
Oh, she can understand.
The myriad of things I don't feel qualified to do and that I am looking already for resources and it is, how do I make sure their lives... I'm not crying!
It's okay to be vulnerable.
Their lives are enriched and wonderful. I don't want to project on like...
What else you don't want?
If you don't play sport with them,
you don't want.
I don't know what you would do.
So the point of the book is that they're like, a shenanigan happens and they all rub each other up the wrong way because boys do. But
shenanigans, I am going to cry.
But they have the emotional language to talk to each other when they've upset each other. They can be vulnerable in front of each other. They can be honest.
She's gonna go.
They can make fun of each other. But the way to do that is make it really funny, because otherwise it just becomes very didactic.
And, of course.
And all the rest of it. And so I have very limited skills. I'm quite useless in the grand scheme of things. But I feel like if the Boxer was having that impact with teenage boys like 13 to 16, which is like a difficult age for teenage boys, then maybe if I go a bit younger, then maybe presenting the Council of Good Friends, and you know, it will be a series, maybe we can get to a point where, I don't know, these kids are able to talk to each other and they don't need a person like Andrew Tate. Like, I don't want boys to either end up like Rob from High Fidelity or like Andrew Tate.
It's interesting to talk about Andrew Tate, isn't it? Because we're talking about lad culture that we all grew up with, and that man being like, God, that's ridiculous. And now we have Andrew Tate, who's so much worse than Rob Fleming.
It. So if you take this Penny situation.
Oh my God.
Which is he's implicit sexual assault.
And he's very insensitive he's completely lacking in self-awareness, Rob.
It's unempathetic, yes. But Andrew Tate is explicitly saying
that's what she
women aren't real people.
Yeah. So it's mad for us to sit here and go, God, that was awful. We grew up with that. And yet the kids that you're talking to in school are dealing with a worse. They don't. It's not even like... men, we know what they're like. It's like men can be dangerous. This is dangerous. And I think
and also that it hasn't gone away, I guess. It's mutated.
Yeah, it was mutated to something more extreme, which I think us growing up we felt like it was already quite extreme.
Yeah.
And it's actually because we're having those conversations and saying, oh, you know, that's not okay. Penny has feelings. It's like then the edges of that opinion have to go further away to make their point. And that's what I thought with Rob, to come back, is that he doesn't have any vulnerability. No. And what you're talking about is so beautiful, and the Council of Good Friends sounds so, so lovely.
But I think the only moment of vulnerability that he does have, when he finds out that she's going out with the old neighbour,
yeah,
and he's worried that he's fucking her better than
yeah
he could have ever yeah done. And that's the moment he feels most vulnerable.
Yeah. And because he does feel really vulnerable, and he expects you as a reader to kind of, come on, you know what it's like. Like, I don't know what sex she's having. It could be really good sex.
But I guess the weird thing about reading it as a 43-year-old is I read it and was like, what a fucking idiot. Yeah, what is wrong with you?
I think the other moment of vulnerability, although we might not recognise it as such, is he doesn't have friends. He's got no one to come to his birthday.
Yeah, that is so sad.
He goes to his parents who have a better life than him. He's been so horrible about
and he's
them.
So mean to him, even though he is his dad.
Yeah.
He's so mean to his
and
dad.
And then he goes home and he watches a couple of VHSs.
Yeah, it seems really sad.
And then he has to essentially bribe a couple yeah of friends to come out who aren't real friends, who he then criticises. So he does need a council of good friends. It's like,
yeah,
friends save you. They are the people who can say, that's a bit that, or you shouldn't do this, or have you considered this other person's point of view?
She does say that, doesn't she? I think actually I did like the character of Laura. I thought she was very believable when she criticises him. She's not like, oh, you're an arsehole. She's like, I've changed and you just have stayed the same. Like,
yeah,
and I do have new friends. And that I really enjoyed that when those friends that he's refused to visit because he assumes they'll be arseholes. And then when he goes to meet them, like they put the kids
fine
to bed and yeah they're just like nice people. And he has a nice evening where people don't mention records. And then he sees their record collection and is like, oh shit,
yeah,
they are people I should hate. Oh my God, I don't hate them.
And yet his only friends, they're just all in a competitive relationship.
Yeah.
And reading those scenes again, like, and I don't know why I maybe didn't acknowledge this at the time, but those friendships, they used to make me feel so anxious
yeah
all the time.
Yeah, you can like, tell, like, they're not happy. The record shop is a terrible place to
this,
work.
Yeah. This
HR needs to get involved.
This is why it took me until, like, 2008 to finally admit I'd never seen With Nell and I, and maybe I should watch it. And yeah I did, and it was fine.
Yeah. But also, it's absolutely fine that you hadn't watched it. Like,
no,
that's
fine. No, it was bad that I hadn't watched it in 1997. Oh my God, I can't believe you haven't seen With Now.
I don't know, Nikesh, if you do this in your real life, so please don't be offended. People who list favourite things,
top fives, top tens,
do you
but
do that?
But this book is very of its top, like, I feel like this book started that trend.
but okay, so here's the thing about that I was thinking rereading it was, and this is where I think it plays into that, I think people missed that this was
satire.
Yeah, is it spawned a lot of top fives and top tens.
Yeah.
And maybe, I'm not saying it created the BuzzFeed listicle, but it's not far off.
It's not far off. It's definitely the birth of it.
Was it really?
But when I read it, I was like, these are avoidant men who can't talk about their feelings.
Yeah.
So this is what my ex-boyfriend used to do.
Yeah.
That he would have considered this what you do in pubs. You sit down, you get your pint, your friend sits opposite you, and you throw at each other topics.
Yeah.
And you create lists, and then you argue about each other's list.
Yeah.
And that's connection. That's their emotional connection. Which I think for me and you, who sit in a pub facing each other and be like, I need to tell you every single thought in my heart.
It's not just
very hard.
It's not because I think I have better conversations. It's because I think it's so disrespectful to the people who make stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah. Who made you in charge?
It happens in Edinburgh sometimes. Actually, no, it happens even before Edinburgh. They go, top 10 things to see in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's how things are valued.
Yeah. But you have a deep respect for the artist.
I do have a deep respect for the artist. No, but so, you know, there'll be like the Booker Prize.
You're annoyed with the book.
No, but how on earth could you pick out of the amazing, how different books are?
Yeah, any form
who
of competition.
Who has more worth
yeah
or value? And I guess that's what they find fun. And I find really, I'm the teacher saying everyone won.
Yeah.
All the books won this year because everyone finished their book.
Everyone did it.
And they all offer something. All of them will be someone's favourite book. What a wonderful time to be alive.
One other thing I want to get back to is just to mention it, just because I think people should be aware, is there is a lot of fat shaming.
Oh yes,
I was really shocked at the level of fat shaming, which again I think is very 90s
and yeah
like just the
and
way
also,
he talks about
that's what bad people think.
Was it any but even remote, like he describes, he even uses the phrase, oh, she opened the door, she was nice, she was round, you know, not really round, not Dawn French round. And I was like, at the time, Dawn French was an incredibly successful, brilliant comedian. Imagine being referenced in a book at the time as like, that's the way I'm telling you that character is.
So go back to what Nikesh says about like the Beckham documentary. I think that's what, oddly, we're now having these blinkers taken
yeah
off to us about how the media talks about famous people.
Yeah.
And so we thought that was okay
yeah
and that they weren't human beings.
I know. And there's another bit which really shocked me where he said, he's talking about weight And he says, oh, well, you know, come on, women, basically. Like, we wouldn't want to have sex with Hattie Jakes, just like you wouldn't want to have sex with Bernard Manning. That made me want to throw the book.
I don't know who Hattie Jakes is.
Hattie Jakes is beautiful.
Okay.
But it makes me think that I wonder what the reaction to the high fidelity vibe would have been like if he wasn't played by John Cusack in the film.
And yes.
He was played by, like, Dwight Schrute.
Yeah. Like, because who does really run a record shop
in the mid-90s, you know? And there's something about the fact that John Cusack's cool and attractive and charming.
So attractive. But the one thing I felt conflicted about was how much I enjoyed reading it. And I know it's a weird thing to say after all the criticism. I looked forward to picking it up. When I got it out of my bag on the tube, I was like, oh, yeah. He's such a good writer that despite everything I have said, I feel a bit bad because he's a brilliant writer.
I feel a bit bad as well. And I feel like it's not pushing back about the quality of a piece of work.
No, that's me. He's a brilliant writer.
His control as an author, as well as his humour.
But I do think it's interesting that I guess my reaction to reading it as a man in his 40s was, this guy thinks that this main character and everyone in his world are utter pricks and is very scathing about them. And you guys had a very different reaction. And I thought that was really interesting. There's a bunch of stuff in the book that is definitely of its time and very time capsule-y. But the thing that sort of fascinated me about that depiction of a male is, I guess I felt like he was deconstructing the nice guy that we're all supposed to think is a nice swell guy. And actually, he's awful.
But maybe that's it. That's why I find it so comfortable. So I wrote down, I prefer Hannibal to this guy, Rob. And I had to deal with that. Why do I
prefer... wrote down, is he a psychopath? This man is solid red flag. He is a bad man. What is happening?
But I think it's such a well-drawn version of that man. The reason I prefer Hannibal is I'm not going to accidentally go on a date with Hannibal.
Yeah.
He's not going to turn up in a bar. He's not going to DM me and I'm going
to
be...
That's really interesting about our reactions. Like, we've had to date that man.
Yeah.
So it's really triggering
for us. And I've wanted to be seen as cool by that man.
Yeah. You wanted him to be your friend. We had to wake up to him and have him list his five favourite
records. Have him reject us because we've got cellulite. Like,
oh,
that
my
kind
God.
Of thing.
Or we didn't want to have sex with him immediately.
Pants are too grey.
It's so visceral for me. I remember being in my early 20s and being told off by men for not knowing things that you now think, why would I
What do you mean
that?
You gave up? What do you mean you gave up on David Foster Wallace? Go home right now.
My favourite tweet ever is a woman who tweets and she says, my favourite thing to do is to pretend that I don't know who David Foster Wallace is. And then men just keep tweeting her going, no, he's right. She's like, I've never heard of him. And they go, no, you've really got, I don't think you're getting confused with someone else. Just act like he never existed. And I was that's really enjoyable. But I think you're right. It's really interesting because we all know that man and we've all had different reactions to that man. And I think I was just so upset about Penny. And I found it, and I was annoyed at myself as well. I was like, oh, I wish I could get past this Penny thing and just enjoy this book.
If we weren't reading for this podcast, I would have stopped.
I was really shocked. I mean, I'm glad that I didn't, because I did actually enjoy the rest of it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you're reading a book that is told from a narrator's perspective and they are an awful person and you're sort of, oh, this is delicious. What is it about those books?
Because the writer tells you why. First of all, meet them, have your reaction, and then a writer lets you in and you go, there's a moment in The American Office where you see a clip of Michael Scott on a children's TV show when he's a child.
That's so good.
And all the other people have brought children into the office, which is something Michael doesn't have. He has, you know, he's got his arrested development. He's not yet an adult. And it's a child saying that he wants to have a wife and lots of children because then he'd have lots of friends and no one could say they didn't want to be his friend. And it's at that point that the office goes from being quite good to, for me, beautiful, because we are laughing, but we also absolutely forgive him.
Yeah.
Because
I wonder if that's quite
a sweet person.
It's interesting because the British office doesn't do that. Mm. The American office constantly delivers heart. And this is a very British feeling novel.
Yes. Well, his big revelation at the end is, why do I keep doing this again and again?
Yeah,
and again?
Even at the very end, he tries to have another affair.
And it's not even that deep a realization.
I needed more. To answer your question, I want my narrator to get vulnerable and to understand why he's behaved like that.
Yeah.
And I just felt like he never gave me, and he was like, that's enough.
But yeah, you kind of assume that he and Laura last another 6 months.
They get married.
His explanation.
They get married and have kids, does all the tidying. Like, that's what it suited to me. I know women who've married that guy.
But when she says to him, she has, you know, the slight awareness to say, you were just about to make this mixtape. I know what that means, yeah. You know. You just fancied someone. Why do you think marriage will stop that? And he has this really unthought through logic.
Yeah.
That once he's made a commitment, that will be the reason he
doesn't. It's terrible. It's a terrible reason to get married.
He needs a contract. And I just wonder if anyone actually believes themselves. Mm. Like, oh, I've cheated in this relationship, but I won't once we're married because you're not supposed to. I've definitely promised.
That's also for me what I found sad. I was like, they definitely get married. He definitely has an affair and they definitely have kids and they get divorced when the kids are about 8 and 10. Like, that's what I could see Laura's future. Mm. And I'm friends with Laura. I'm not friends. I have to listen. I'm the one, in like my perspective, I'm the one who has to listen about all the stuff Rob's done. And I'm spending the whole time going, but we knew this before you married him.
He mentions what Laura earns a lot.
Yeah, she's an important lawyer.
But it's always sort of 45-50 grand a year. Used to be earning 20. We're told a lot how
and,
much.
And it's
earns.
Always very angry as well.
Yes. He's angry that a woman earns more than him.
This is the thing that like, that I hadn't seen the first time that I read it, is he's fucking angry. Mm. He's so angry with everyone.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because he needs a therapist to help him understand that he's really angry with himself for being such a knob.
Yeah. He's hateful about both his parents and his childhood.
Right from that first phone call.
And also, I the other thing I did find hard was like, his reaction to death and grief.
Yes.
Here I go. That he's never, it's when you get to that bit and he's basically never really had anything really bad happen to him.
Yeah.
And that's who we would now call, oh my gosh, you're so,
I thought you might like
accused
it.
Of being so privileged.
Oh, I liked it. Oh, because he said, he has a very brief conversation with Liz about the fact that she lost her father.
Oh, he's terrible and to
then,
speak to me.
And then he says, I'm only going to be friends with people whose parents have died. Because it's the most, that's the deepest conversation he's ever had.
Can I put in one of my notes? The privilege of his life. No grief, his own shop, his own choices. He has never known sadness until she dumps him.
That should have been the advert for the film.
But you know what? Like, I think it's worth a reread. I did enjoy it. I thought it was a really interesting timepiece to go back. And also, as you said, it's not like now is perfect. Like, we're not dealing with, and now men are great and we give them space and it's okay. Now they're angry. Now he would go to the internet and find Andrew Tate. And Andrew Tate would tell him, you're right to be angry. Laura is a bitch. So like, maybe 1995 was better than we thought.
Yeah, he's got discogs.com forum written all over.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what used to happen is men, teenagers, young men who felt that they weren't connecting, straight men who weren't connecting with women, used to have the
music.
Robs of this world and the music. And now they have the internet, which tells them that women are wrong to be. I think my biggest lesson actually with this book is that, I was a teenage girl. I thought things about men. I sort of worked out via reading other people's work and, you know, what was wrong. And then I thought we'd solved it and I'd ignored everything else happening since. Yeah.
And we never...
Because you've worked it out.
Yeah, it's a constant evolution as well. The arrogance of every generation that thinks this is how men should be. Like, people will be reading stuff written in 2023 in 20 years being like, God, I can't believe they thought that was progressive.
And also, as Nikesh, as you said, it's not getting back to teenagers. So 40-year-olds being like, we're sorted with this now, doesn't mean anything's changed in the playground.
Meanwhile, all those 40-year-old men are saying, well, as a father of daughters.
I do actually care because I've got a woman in the house now. Not the one I'm married to, she doesn't come.
A friend of mine who is also a father of daughters, I called someone the C word.
Yeah.
And he said, are you sure you're allowed to say that? I mean, we are fathers of daughters. And
I
was like, yeah. And he was like, and I realised he was being really serious. And I didn't really know what to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, don't use it at the doctors. If you're going in for some medical reason with your family, that's not the worst.
Yeah.
It's so complicated, isn't it? Because it also implies there is a right answer to any of these things. It's like, there's not a right or wrong answer, but because you have daughters doesn't mean that
I need to ask my dad if that's the reason I've never heard him use the C word. If he'd had sons, it'd be all right.
He'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
On that note, we've run out of time. Nikesh, thank you so much. I really thought, I as soon as I read this, I was like, this is going to be a good chat.
We're going to have a good chat.
We're going to have a good chat about this.
It's also the most we've ever texted about a book.
Yeah. Oh my God, have you got to that bit? Oh my God, I can't believe it. Did he do what? Yeah. So, and I would recommend it. I still think I enjoyed the process.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No, because I think there are people have too few time to read.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
And there are better books to read.
But if you did...
If someone had read it, I would talk to
you. If you remember it
them.
First time round, I think that's quite interesting.
It's worth revisiting.
Yeah, I enjoyed the revisit.
Because I think I read it at a completely different time in my life. And I'm glad I reread it now. And yeah, that men are not okay.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a really interesting passage in Claire Dedera's Monsters about Nabokov's Lolita, but about writers intentionally writing bad men, unlikable men, problematic men. And I'm really glad I'd read that before reading High Fidelity, because sometimes the flavour of not liking someone makes you think the author is a bad person who believes everything they've written down rather than someone who's masterful at creating something to show you something that's not very nice about people.
There we go. Dr. Nikesh, thank you
so
much.
Double doctor.
Doctor. Nikesh Shukla.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
Next week's book guest is... Monsters, A Fan's Dilemma by Claire Dedera.
Sarah's novel Weirdo and my book You Are Not Alone are both available to buy now.
And you can come to a live show. It's the 25th of January at Foyles in London, and we'll be celebrating and exploring Carriad's paperback launch of You Are Not Alone. And we've got some brilliant guests, and we'll be talking and crying and laughing and grieving
and talking about writing, grieving. We're going to be joined by Joe Caulfield and Rick Samada, and it's going to be a lovely intimate chat about grief and the paperback of You Are Not Alone coming out on the 1st of February. So join us on the 25th of January,
and thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast, and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.